Hello, and welcome to a fifth Saturday on the Road Again interview. I'm Virginia Clifford Anders, the host for this particular set of interviews. My interviewee for today is Roger Ferland. He and I have conversed before on the subject we're going to be talking about again today, which is on traveling with a disability or two or three. So he has done a lot of research. I have done some as well, and my level of disability since the last time we talked has changed considerably, so this is of great interest to me as well. Welcome, Roger.
Well, thank you. You're a moving target, I guess.
I am.
In terms of where we're going.
Yeah, but the target gets slower.
Believe me, I know how that is.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I sent to Roger was a list of questions for an overview of what kinds of issues are relevant to somebody with a disability. It's a different world traveling with a disability, and for people who have not done that, it is a useful project to make that kind of a review, not necessarily for themselves as a disabled traveler, but for someone they might be traveling with for sensitivity, for a family member or friend, and maybe even for inclusion in future issues for themselves. So, Roger, how long have you been traveling?
Oh, I've been traveling since I was a little child.
Mm-hmm.
My parents were great believers in travel, and they took me along with them, and I got to be addicted to travel. And so after I came back from Vietnam and had gone to school, then I thought I want to continue to travel and enjoy traveling. And I had a disability, but I believe that that's not, is at most a hassle, not a barrier. So, and we'll talk about that in today's program.
Right. The concept of something being a hassle rather than a barrier. I like the word hassle better than challenge, because challenge just feels cute. But that's just me.
Okay.
Dealing with my own issues for the years, I just grit my teeth when I hear somebody say, oh, your challenges. Hassles is a better word. So then, and I know that you were married for quite a long time, and did you travel together for a long time?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, our honeymoon was a 30-day trip all around the country. My wife had not traveled very much as a kid, and I wanted to open the United States up to her as part of our honeymoon. And it worked out extremely well. We ended up not hating each other. It was good.
It's a good sign.
Stay married for 42 years, so it must have worked.
Were you, at that time, were you traveling in a vehicle, a large vehicle, or how were you traveling?
I was driving a green Volvo that I had purchased in the hospital in Denver, and did not have air conditioning.
Ooh.
In those days, you could get cars without air conditioning, which mm-hmm. amazed me. And I bought it in Denver, so I didn't necessarily need the air conditioning. Fortunately, I brought it down here, and I really needed the air conditioning. But that's what we specifically traveled in initially, and that's what we took our honeymoon in was that car.
When you were doing that, were you in a wheelchair by then, or were you on sticks?
I was wearing prosthesis mm-hmm. then, and wore them most of the time, and wore them when I was driving. And wish I could still be wearing them. I'm a little old and I had some issues, but for 40 odd years I had two prostheses, one below the knee, barely below the knee, and then one much higher on the other side.
But you're not wearing those now.
I'm not wearing those now. I unfortunately, after I was 70 years old, found that I just did not have the stamina to wear them for any length of time without getting really pooped out and cranky. So it was better that I consider an alternative, and this time I'm just using my wheelchair.
When you say that it made you really tired to wear them, can you describe that a little more for me?
Well, it became a challenge to get them on, became a challenge to walk in them, and became a challenge to keep up. And it's interesting you asked that question. I was literally meeting with my cardiologist yesterday, and she was of the belief that I ought to be able to do this. And I wish I were. I said I tried for 2 years to wear prosthesis, and I had been doing it for 40 years before that, and I had plenty of stamina, but at a certain age, I just simply lost it. It was not the result of a disease or a problem. It was just the result of being old.
Yeah, understood. Yeah, I walk on crutches now. I'd walked on canes for a while, and the crutches are better than a walker for me because the walker hurts my arms. I think it's the angle at which that you're grasping and moving forward. The crutches work better for me, but I'm getting to a point where I've already started the process of looking at a wheelchair, and I think I'm going to actually have a better time traveling with that kind of an assistance.
Well, that's one of the things we'll be discussing today,
mm-hmm.
as to how to make that as uneventful as possible.
So when you were doing your research recently, what did you find most, did you find something that really surprised you?
I was surprised positively as far as all of the changes that have occurred in just the recent years to allow people with disabilities to go just about every place they want. There are some places that are somewhat problematic, the Kalahari Desert, for example. But there are also a lot of places that are becoming much more disabled-friendly with devices and operations and procedures that make it doable. And I guess one of the lessons that we learned from this process, and I learned from research, is the first thing you got to do is to assume that you can do whatever it is you want to do, and you need to just have the time to figure out what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a challenge, but one of the there are a number of rules that people who are disabled and travel adhere to. And one of the first of those rules, and maybe the most important one, is plan, plan, plan. Know what you're going to do, know how you're going to do it, think about it, and so you go in with a sort of mindful attitude, and that makes the travel possible.
So when someone is getting ready to travel, you have the advantage of all the experience, and experience through changes as well, physical changes and time. If someone is getting ready to go I'll take myself, for example. If I were getting ready to go first time in a wheelchair, would it be advantageous for me to travel with somebody as a companion, as an aide, or is traveling alone something that is doable enough now with more open industry?
I still believe it is more enjoyable to travel with somebody, even if it isn't an absolute necessity because of the disability. I think it's much better to share what it is you're doing, and there are going to be instances where you really need another person in any case. So one of the things that you ask a very good question. Again, I would not let it preclude me from doing something, but to the extent that I could travel with somebody, particularly if they were more physically able than I was, it's probably more enjoyable for both of us.
Mm-hmm. Have you done cruises?
Many times.
Mm-hmm.
Love cruising. Again, there are some barriers, but for the most part, cruise ships are equipped and are set up for the disabled. Some are much more amenable than others. River cruising, as an example, it's very difficult to river cruise if you've got a wheelchair because the river cruises in Europe don't have to meet any ADA standards. So they tend to not have wide enough hulls or doorways or those kinds of things, and you simply can't use those river cruises. Beautiful, luxurious, brand new ships, but they were not designed to allow wheelchairs to proceed. Conversely, American flag ships, American Cruise Lines, for example, with paddle wheels, or some of the, they have a number of small boats of 100 to 200 passengers, because they have to meet U.S. standards, are set up for disabled people to use the bathrooms, to use the elevators, and all of those things that some of the European cruisers just don't do.
Mm-hmm. We've been talking so far about the disability as something that you see, say, on a sign with a wheelchair, so people easily recognize that we're talking about disabilities. What other kinds of disabilities in your research have you found, or in your travels have you found, that can be problematic?
Again, the issue is the visible versus invisible disabilities. And there are plenty of invisible disabilities, many of them the result of mental problems of one sort or another, that don't preclude you from traveling, but they have to be planned through, as we've talked about, for people to use and take advantage of the stuff they're doing in the travel. So, again, many, many more people, as particularly as the population ages, are more likely to have mental issues that they need to consider in the travel process.
Is traveling with a disability, can we say, I don't know if we can say this as a general rule, but is traveling with a disability that you have found, for instance, more expensive?
Ooh, that's a great question. And in some cases it is. I know in a European trip, I typically use a self-driven wheelchair. I don't use an electric wheelchair. But because of the nature of things, for the first time in my life, I had to use an electric wheelchair. And it was darned expensive. They'll deliver it to the ship. Since I don't own one or use one, typically, they'll deliver it to the ship, and you'll have it for the entire period of the cruise, and then you give it back to them. It's not cheap, and there are other things of that kind. But again, the amount of difference is not so great as to discourage you from doing things. Mm-hmm. That's the important thing, that you need to be aware of the fact that the ability to take advantage of the amazing things in the world right now from travel standpoint overcomes a lot.
Mm-hmm. Have you talked to any TSA agents or anybody that serves the public on a day-to-day basis and sees thousands of people go through, and what their experiences have been in terms of being able to help someone through their purview?
Typically, TSA doesn't do that. That's mm-hmm. done by the airlines. That's their responsibility under the law. They are supposed to make accommodation and assistance to people with disabilities. And my experience has been that the airlines for the most part, vary as to how much they're committed to doing these things. For the most part, they're good. And again, I'm thinking more about U.S.-flagged airlines than I am about airlines in other countries. But for the most part, they will assist you. There are issues that arise because you're disabled and you're on a plane for six or eight hours that are problematic. Going to the bathroom being the first one. Those bathrooms on planes are simply not designed for anybody that's has any disability whatsoever, no matter how minor it is.
Yeah.
Hard to get in, hard to get out. Some people would argue that you're better off taking an airline that has a stop in between.
Oh.
And rather than assuming, as we all do when we travel, I want a nonstop. Well, that's a nonstop is 6 or 8 hours. That's tough in terms of trying to accommodate things. So, again, these are things that you want to plan ahead for and work through in your mind. And one thing we haven't talked about that's really important is when to get a travel agent.
Right.
I'm a great believer, even though I wasn't until I really started traveling, in travel agents. There are some travel agents that are absolute experts on how to deal with the disabled and will do a lot of the heavy lifting intellectually and physically for you.
How do you find one like that?
Internet, easy. A fellow by the name of Howard with Accessible Journeys out of Philadelphia was who I used, and I had heard about him, and an amazing fellow. And they take people all over Europe into places that you wouldn't have believed they could get. Now, there are some places that raise issues, Venice being a great example. Venice is very difficult to get around if you've got a disability.
I know,
those
I did it.
Bridges are deadly.
Oh.
But there are ways around that. Again, though, you talk about expense. Anything that you deal with in Europe that's going to require anybody to do anything and require any kind of equipment is going to be expensive.
Mm-hmm.
Venice is worth it, I think, but it's not easy. But as I say, you've got travel agents that specialize in disabilities. Some travel agents are specifically trained or have had experience with specific disabilities. Visually impaired people, for example, there are several travel agents that are specifically trained or have used and had experience with that particular disability. And so what you need to do is a little research, like everything else in the world, and figure out what's the best travel agent to do what you need done.
What about traveling with a guide dog? Have you anything about that?
Well, again, there's a whole lot of literature out there about traveling with a guide dog. And people who have a guide dog and have the person that trained that guide dog, frequently they have the experience and the knowledge, but if they don't, they know who does.
Mm.
And the people who use guide dogs are a pretty tightly fraternity and tend to know who on the outside can give you the best information for using the guide dog and what are the most guide dog friendly ways to travel and issues to raise.
Mm-hmm. So it pays to create a community around yourself.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Which I think, again, is a good lesson for disabilities generally to get expertise. That's why, as I say, I encourage travel agents that you're using it, particularly the first time you've traveled. If you haven't been on a cruise ship before, you haven't traveled in Europe, or you haven't traveled in Greece or whatever, start with a travel agent. It's important to do that. Let me say one other thing that we typically don't talk about, and that is travel insurance. I'm a huge believer in travel insurance. I know it's expensive, and I know you probably, hopefully, don't ever have to use it, but I'll tell you, as somebody who has had to use it, I can tell it is a lifesaver, I mean, financially and every other way. And most of the good travel insurance companies have experts there. You get in a problem, they will work with you to work through it. And that's part of the insurance experience, if that's the right words, is take advantage of that.
I'm thinking AAA as being a good source would be, does that make sense?
I haven't had any experience with AAA. I know they have expertise in a lot of areas. I just don't know. The company that I used was AIG. They're a big player.
Yeah.
In the travel insurance industry, but there are four or five major players that write most of the policies, and a lot of the travel entities have their own ties with insurance companies. And again, I would check on that. But I'm a great believer, as I said before, in travel insurance, so I would strongly advise you to at least look into it.
Mm-hmm. Do you carry extra equipment in case something breaks?
Actually, I don't, and probably should. I typically, the only thing I have is when I had prosthesis, it was a different issue. And I've had a crisis with the prosthesis. I never forget in the Minneapolis airport, walking on a curb and breaking my foot in two.
Oh.
And so I was sort of stuck. And unfortunately, those were the days when I had a particular technology in my legs that was World War II technology called a Hydrocaine's knee. And there was nobody around that could fix it. All the people who had done, there were the prosthetists that had experience with World War II technology, were dying out. I got fortunate. There was there happened to be a fellow up in St. Cloud, Minnesota. I drove there. He fixed it. But that was just pure luck.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can get yourself into these problems. As I say, my experience has been you can also work your way out. It just sort of scares you when it happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like anything else in life, the key is knowing that there are solutions, there are ways around it. You just have to be prepared to look for them.
Exactly.
So what, when you were looking at websites, I found a couple that I loved, one of which was called Smarter Travel, which is a really interesting site. Because it isn't just for people with disabilities. It has lots of really interesting information for traveling in general, but it also has a section that's specific to traveling with a disability. And so I found that to be quite a surprise. It's one of those things where I look at it and say, boy, maybe I could travel again. What'd you find?
That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, again, it's finding somebody with the expertise up front to advise you. And I'd start with travel agents that are experts in dealing with disabilities. And they tie into the airlines, because it's important that if you are going to fly, that the airlines know about the fact you've got a disability and have whatever they've got to deal with that. For example, in my case, because I don't have legs, just getting into the seat requires me to get in this funny contraption that goes down the aisle and lets me off. Okay, I didn't even know that thing existed because I had prosthesis before, so I just walked on the prosthesis. Now that I don't do that, and I had to come up with a different way, and the airlines have a different way to get into the seat and just transfer into it. And it works.
Well, I have been curious about that one myself because, for instance, the aisles have gotten so much narrower. Oh, my gosh. So you couldn't. You'd have to have a wheelchair at either end rather than on the plane, or one in, they would put it under baggage. So then what do you do? So you're saying that there's a, is it like a Hoyer lift? What would you know what to?
No, it's a chair specifically designed to go down those narrow, narrow aisles.
Uh-huh.
It's not just the aisles that are narrower, it's the distance between the seats that are, that are narrower.
Yeah.
And again, trying to get in there from the transfer point is not easy,
mm-hmm.
but it's doable. And so that's, you know, but we were just talking about your experience with the expertise on the internet. And one of the things you and I have both talked about is the famous Rick Steves.
Yes.
Who was on PBS, or is on PBS. I don't know, his show is amazing. And he has his own horror travel company. It's become his own industry, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of time he devotes in his website to traveling with disabilities and relying on other folks to provide some good principles. And specifically, he talks about individual cities, London, Paris, Athens, that have certain barriers and how you can overcome those barriers if you're traveling and with a disability. Again, it's important to get these points dealt with up front before you commit significant resources to paying for a trip.
I'm thinking that it would be interesting if a group such as a AAA, because it's so well known, had periodic classes for people either traveling with a disability or traveling with someone who is disabled, where they could ask questions as a group, like an evening workshop with coffee and donuts or whatever, and they could sit and ask questions. That would be an interesting way to put it into a kind of a community setting.
Well, and not only that, AAA would benefit because they're going to use AAA resources, including all their travel expertise and the cost of all the things for which they get money themselves. So they have a good incentive to provide that kind of a service as part of the whole panoply of things they do.
You don't know if that's out there, though, right?
I do not.
Yeah, I was thinking that that might be something I'd then research later because it would be kind of interesting to either initiate one or come across one that to share the information on Sunsounds. That would be very interesting. Or hook up with somebody like Rick Steves and see if they have anything that they do on any kind of a local basis.
Good question.
Yeah.
Good question. I have a number of friends that use his services to travel. Since we're in that subject, though, mm-hmm. let's talk about some specific tips that folks ought to have if they're disabled and traveling. One, the most important one, is to bring extra medication. Make sure that you have that information. Make sure that you've got it in a form that wherever you go, they're going to be able to read it. I know as when I traveled and got sick and got pneumonia, they needed to know at the hospital what medications I was taking. Fortunately, I had a list and could provide it. But it's important that you have a list, and it's important that you bring extra medication. So that's important. And also, you need to have, to the extent that your doctor has taken notes about your situation, you need to have the availability of those notes, the doctor's name, the doctor's phone number. All of those things are most people don't think about, but if you're disabled, you better.
No.
And again, as part of that research, make sure you know how the physician system, wherever you're going, works,
mm-hmm.
and how to access it. So
also, that would be a part of the preference, or the preface would be telling your doctor or discussing with your doctor where and when you're going to be doing this.
Exactly. Up front.
Uh-huh.
Because most people, depending on the nature of their disability, may want to get a physical examination as part of their preparation for the trip to make sure that if there are things that a particular country, for example, creates a certain kind of problem for which you have to get shots,
mm-hmm.
There may be other shots you have to get that aren't in the normal list.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what you need to do is to make sure that your doctor has is comfortable with the travel that you're going to do and the provisions you made for it.
Well, and the other piece, another piece of that would be whatever medications you're on, if there are any reasons not to take certain shots that would be normal for wherever you're going.
Good point. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So moving along in terms of some of the things that you need to consider, one of the things that I like about cruising is that where the ship is amenable to disabled people, you better, if you get a disabled cabin, particularly for bathrooms, you better get it way up front. My experience has been that cruise ships do not have very many cabins that are disability friendly. At most, in some cases, just two cabins on a ship that has hundreds of cabins. So, and the ships simply weren't designed that way. And so they didn't put them in. And so one of the things you need to do is, if you need, for a lot of reasons, to have a disabled-friendly cabin, you need to ask for it as soon as you can. My experience has been that there's a list, or that the line is over a year long.
Wow.
To get a cruise ship with a particular disability cabin in it, and you have to reserve it in advance. And as the population gets older and has some of these limitations, it's all the more important that if you're going to cruise, that you take care of that. And since you're doing the research anyway on the cruise ship, make sure that you find out what, if you're going to get guidance, if that guidance has had any experience with disabilities. A lot of the tours have really good guides. They're absolute crackerjacks. They know where they're going. They know all of the things that you're going to see. They can provide you with historical information, a lot of things like that. But they may never have traveled with somebody with a disability or know what to do.
Right.
And so it's important that you at least ask the question, all right, my tour guide, are they people who have any experience working with the disabled? And if not, who knows? I mean, there are a number of, again, tour companies as well as travel agents that have this kind of information at hand, and they can let you know what it is. Similarly, and more specifically, when I travel, I love to go to museums.
Mm.
And museums are all over the place in terms of disability friendly. Most of them are more and more so, because that's part of their market, disability friendly. And you think of specific museums. The Guggenheim Museum in New York City is famous for how well it's designed to deal with disabled folks. The Louvre generally is that way. So again, these are things that you need to think about in advance. Sit down and make a list of what they are, and make sure you deal with them up front rather than getting stuck in a museum that you can't take advantage of. You paid to get in it. It's got some really nice Van Goghs, but you can't get to the Van Goghs because of where they are, and they aren't set up for you to do them because there's 35 steps to get up to that particular part of the museum. You need to know that, and somebody who's helping you needs to know it as well. So,
are there ways to educate a tour guide up front? Or, for instance, if you're going on a particular kind of special trip, let's say a trip through a college or a university that's designed for their alumni. If it's a younger group, and therefore the person who's disabled is a younger person, and they want to go with their friends, finding a way to make sure that the tour guides, that the accessibility is there, may be a little bit more, not complicated, but less obvious than with an older group. That's could create some a problem or two.
Absolutely. And again, the experts exist. You just need to get on the internet, look them up, it is pretty amazing. The kind of information that's out there, and that the experts are out there. The problem is, frankly, there aren't enough of those folks out there, because more and more people are traveling farther and farther to more exotic places, and the people who need to help them do that aren't available. Mm-hmm. They're just too busy doing other things, and so it's very, very difficult. So again, as part of the principles of what you're doing and preparing for, always have a backup plan. You talked about what if my wheelchair breaks? What do I do? How do I get it fixed? Depends on where you are, but some places are going to make it much more difficult than others, particularly if you've got a wheelchair like mine that's made out of a substance that they may not have normally in a wheelchair repair place. So have a backup plan. Know what you're going to do if something happens. And know what that is.
One of the factors of traveling with a disability that I found, and I was much less disabled than I am now when I was in Italy, and I was on a cane and with back issues and leg issues, but still a lot less disabled than I am now, and that was just about 10 years or so ago. The tour guides move very fast, and they expect the group to keep up. And there's a lot of extra tiredness involved in managing a disability, and that can be across the board of various different kinds of disabilities. So that element of the effect of being in a different place and in a more challenging situation, not just necessarily access, but challenging for the managing the amount of energy you have to bring to the game, could be very intimidating almost.
Certainly, to use the word that we weren't going to use, it's challenging.
Mm-hmm.
And again, difficult. And also, you know, you may not want to start the first time you travel on a tour in a place that you know is going to present issues that you've got to overcome. Till you've done it a little bit, I would pick places that are, for the most part, disabled friendly, working with people who know what they're doing, and tours. It is amazing to me, though, again, national parks are a good example. National parks are very, for the most part, disabled friendly. Can't always be, because some things just physically can't allow that. But Volcano National Park in Hawaii is a good example. There's a whole lot of other ones that are amazingly disabled friendly. You should know that and make your choices of where you're going initially. Now, when you figure out what works and what doesn't work and who you should talk to and who is important from the standpoint of making sure that your travel is as worry-free as possible, then it makes more sense. But when you're doing this for the first time, and many folks are, they have a new disability they hadn't had before, or the disability they have has gotten more serious, they need to work through in their mind what they're going to do, under normal circumstances, and what they're going to do if there's a challenge that they hadn't thought of and that they need to deal with.
So if somebody is new to having a disability, or, again, as you say, a changed circumstance with an existing disability, and they haven't traveled much, I would think that perhaps instead of going to the Galapagos, they might go to Utah to get the whole concept of traveling with a disability experience in an area where you're going to have much more help available and much more resources available to you.
That's a good point. And again, I think it's important to crawl before you can walk. Try these things out. Actually, it's interesting you mentioned the Galapagos. There are tour cruises that are in boats that are, for the most part, have the ability to get around in them. Now, again, they don't have to meet U.S. standards, so that may not be a good idea, but at least ask the question. If I get on this boat and I'm in a wheelchair, can I get around on the boat? How do I get off the boat? And again, how do I get from the boat to, if I have to get a small boat to get to the shore, how is that going to work if I'm in a wheelchair?
So knowing the questions to ask are, I think, absolutely crucial. So, for instance, if you were to say to a tour company, can I do this? And they say, oh, yes, of course you can, but you don't ask the further questions. How do we make that kind of a transfer? Then you can get stuck that way, even though you were told up front that it was possible.
Well, everything's possible according to every cruise ship I've ever talked to, if I was going to book passage on it, which, you know, with nice cruise ships, it's a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
We can do that. We can do that. Okay, I would go to the next step, exactly what you're talking about. What is your experience, and what do you do? How do you get the wheelchair, which is way up in the boat, down to where they get on the lighter so that they can go across to the shore. How does that work? Who does it? How does it get done? And what's your experience? Don't be afraid. This is your money.
Mm-hmm.
And as I have said before, and as we've said before, it isn't cheap. Mm-hmm. So you want to be sure that you're going to get the full benefit of what it is you're paying for. So you want to be sure that that's possible, and they have had experience with folks. And again, that becomes less and less of an issue as more and more people travel with disabilities, and as the population gets older, and so therefore have disabilities that they hadn't had before, important that you check. And so it's sort of, it's a trade-off. A big ship is more likely to have accommodations, but it's also, you've got to deal with 4,500 people who are mm-hmm. trying to get into the same port you are, and you're in a wheelchair. There's issues up front that you need to be aware of.
Now, one of the things that I see that you have a particular advantage of is with an attorney's mind, asking questions and looking for details is part of who you are and part of your training. What if you're dealing with somebody who is phobic or who has one of those invisible disabilities and has trouble challenging the tour guide or challenging the company for information? Now what do they do?
You like to ask hard questions.
I do.
And that is a tough one. Tough for a lot of reasons. And again, if you have a travel agent, they should be running interference for you. Their expertise, for which they're getting paid, at least as a commission, ought to be able to deal with exactly these kinds of issues. They should have had some experience with invisible disabilities and how they adapted. And so somebody that has, for example, dementia, and it's very slow moving, should they decide to travel? Again, I tend to look at things from the other side. I don't want to be talked out of doing something
right.
because I have the disability. I want to figure out how to do it with the disability.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have a travel agent and you have an airline and you have tour guides, all of these people are supposed to be your advocates, your experts, your folks for which you're paying. And mm-hmm. so you expect them to provide this kind of information.
Right. And if you have the attitude and the forcefulness of personality to make sure that happens, that's a really helpful position to be in.
I think we find that in most things in life, being a little more assertive, particularly with somebody who is supposedly providing you with a service, always works. I'm reminded of when I had gotten pneumonia. I was literally on the bus to go to the cruise ship when I contracted pneumonia in Athens. And a lot of things worked to make that not necessarily pleasant, but certainly not unpleasant. Athens has a very good expat community. They have some great, the place I stayed, the hospital was wonderful. I was treated very well. More importantly, my girlfriend, who had her own husband passed away, she had worked with medical care, and she basically took it over, made sure that we contacted the insurance company, made sure that the hospital had a liaison that spoke good English and that could act as a go-between. Don't afraid to be, as you were implying, but certainly the way I'm saying it, don't be afraid to be assertive. Not obnoxious, just very firm about what you expect from this process and the fact that you want to have somebody who is on your side at the hospital that's advocating for you and that your insurance company is also on your side and they're advocating for you as well. So again, it's important to make it very clear that you expect the best service and you expect the best medicine and you expect the best you can get. And don't be afraid to say that.
We talked about, and you had brought up the concept of doctor's notes, making sure that you have doctor's notes. If there are specific elements of your care, your everyday world that make a difference. What if you are going to Greece or you're going to some place where a different language is going to be the most predominant? Would you recommend someone get that translated ahead of time? Or, in other words, pick some place that is where it might be necessary, where you know what the language is going to be and get it translated? Or how would you deal with that?
Boy, it's hard to anticipate, A, what country you're going to be in, B, whether the language is a problem or not. Again, Western European countries are a completely different animal than African or even some of the South American countries in terms of the accessibility to English-speaking or English-translating resources. I've seen both happen. Again, I try to anticipate them and deal with them. One of the things that I know you really like to do is the use of thumb drives to to put all your information in. That's one thing you can do. I mean, everybody has access, I don't care how primitive the country might be, to computers and thumb drives. And so to the extent that you can carry this in a very portable fashion with a lot of information on it, that's something you ought to consider.
That makes a great deal of sense. For that matter, the cell phones that people use, the iPhones and the smartphones, probably have an app that would be maybe one that could translate information. That'd be an interesting thought.
Yeah, they do, and if you've got a laptop that you're bringing with you, that's even better. So, again, there's resources out there. Don't be afraid to use them. Don't be afraid to use them up front so you don't have to respond, but in fact have anticipated the situation.
Right, be proactive as opposed to acting out of terror or need.
Exactly. And again, I don't want to discourage people from doing things because we're adding all these complications.
Right.
I'm just saying that because we're adding all these complications, you can feel much better about traveling, that things are going to be a smoother than with a disability than what you would have anticipated 10 years ago, for example.
Right.
And that's why, as I said before, it's important that you get help from your airline. That is what they should. That's part of the service that they're providing, and the same with the cruise ship.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I found that was a great advantage for me when I was traveling with my choir group to Italy was that I was going to have them put me in a wheelchair for the plane travel over and back. I got to go in first. So there was a friend of mine on the in the choir who thought that was pretty great. So he just volunteered to escort me all the way over and back, which meant he got to get on first too. So those kinds of workarounds can work really well for the other person if you've got somebody that'll pal with you. If you don't have a given individual,
that's a really good point. I hadn't thought of it, but yeah, I mean, whatever works.
Yeah, I'd say that. I know the TSA doesn't provide help per se, but knowing the rules would be crucial too.
Absolutely.
Does their set of rules apply internationally? Are they a shared set of rules, or are there different ones?
Again, a good question. The answer is that generally it depends. When you say internationally, it depends on whether you're talking about Western Europe, or you're talking about Africa, or you're talking about Asia.
True.
And if so, when my daughter lives in Shanghai, and comes back and forth between China and the United States, that works out very well. I mean, there's good airline service between both countries, and even though she only speaks a limited amount of Mandarin, she found that because almost all of these folks are flying American planes and have American staffs, and because that's where the money is. So they tend to be sensitive to those kinds of issues. And I wouldn't hesitate to ask them.
One of the things that I think is really helpful, it certainly has always been helpful for me, not as a traveler per se, but just journeying through life, is if you get into a situation which seems unsolvable or certainly creates a speed bump in whatever you're doing.
That's a good word.
Is to relax and enjoy the detour. That can be helpful.
Well, again, life's a learning experience, and travel certainly is, and that's one of the reasons you travel, is to learn. And you get exposure to the culture, whether you wanted to be or not, and that's what I learned when I was in the hospital for almost 2 weeks. I learned a lot about the Greek people and a lot of opportunity to talk to staff and everything, and many of them didn't speak very good English, but we could communicate as people can when they have to. And I learned a great deal more about, you know, what interest the Greeks like and what they do, and it was fun. Now, was that what I would recommend doing, is getting pneumonia so that you're in a hospital for 2 weeks? No. But I did take major advantage of it, and frankly, it was pretty pleasant. And because I had travel insurance, when I came back to the States, I had a doctor accompany me, which was really nice, and he could go through all the lines and move things through. So it was it was something that could have been really bad, but it turned out to be really positive from that standpoint.
How was the food in the hospital in Greece?
Horrible. But it was only because that's what these guys were ordered to do. As soon as they changed, as soon as I didn't have to have, you know, twigs and bark and could eat real food, it was pretty darn good.
Ah.
But again, it's important to understand that expats get treated better than the native citizens in most of these countries because of insurance. They make more money on expats than they make on their own folks.
Mm-hmm.
So they tend to have more likelihood of a private room, more pampered service, something I hadn't expected at all. And whereas most of their own citizens are in big wards with a lot of patients.
Oh, okay.
So it's a big difference.
Yeah. Well, of course, the thing that made your experience even better was the insurance itself.
And that's why, as I say, I advocate strongly,
mm-hmm.
Particularly if you're going to a foreign country. But even if you're just here, travel insurance. It is not inexpensive, but it's a good investment. And again, looking at how much you're going to have to spend on these tours or cruises or whatever they are, you want to be sure that investment's protected. And if things go south, you want to have, again, as we said all along, a backup plan.
Mm-hmm.
And a component of that backup plan has to be, in my opinion, at least traveler's insurance.
Mm-hmm. What about another tip that you found in your research?
A lot of the things we've alluded to already, find out if you're hiring a guide, for example, are they licensed in that state or that country? And if they are, what do they have to do for licensure? How much training do they get? And is it in areas that would be relevant to disabilities? How much can they tell you about where you'll be going? Are there curbs, for example? That's one of the things we all, the disabled population, particularly if you're in a wheelchair, but also if you're using crutches.
Mm-hmm.
What are these places like? And that's true in the United States. It's very hard for me to get around New York City in a wheelchair. Chicago, I have much less trouble, and I have almost no trouble at all in Boston. Now, again, that depends with the weather. I mean, all weather being equal, it's difficult to get around some places. I would want to know, though, again, continuing what we were talking about, you're asking about the guides, are they licensed, and all those things. Also, just ask the question, well, you say that, you know, that you're used to dealing with people with disabilities. Exactly how many people have you actually had in your experience that have disabilities, and what did you do about those disabilities?
Mm-hmm.
What kind were they? What did you do about them? How are you set up as a tour operator to deal with these things? Some tour operators are much more experienced and much better able to deal with disabilities than others are, and you need to ask those questions up front and don't hesitate to do it.
Have you found any instances where when you ask those kinds of questions and you were expecting a certain kind of response, you weren't getting it, then what do you do?
Consider whether that's the only tour in town. I mean, if you're not getting answers that you think are sufficiently responsive, don't hesitate to consider going someplace else.
The travel's the thing itself.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So
I would love to travel at some point, either by train. Have you done much train travel even?
No, it's funny because that's one of the first questions that you ask. How much have you been on a train? The answer is, other than the short little trains around here,
yeah.
I have not had taken. No, that's not entirely true. I did take the Canadian.
Oh, did you?
Yes, the Gold Leaf service.
Oh, my.
It was amazing. absolutely amazing. Now, that's when I had a prosthesis, so it was much wear prosthesis, much easier to get up into the bubble area of the train and do things. But it was fabulous. Again, not cheap, but really nice service. Those Canadian Pacific hotels and Banff and Lake Louise and Jasper are just amazing.
Oh.
It's beautiful, beautiful country, and certainly one of those things you should do at least once.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these things are, at least in my opinion, are worth doing, but only once. I mean, there's so much of the world to see.
Exactly.
That you can take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
Cruises to Alaska. But again, those cover so much different territory than they did before, literally and figuratively. You've got large cruise ships that go to the normal ports that everybody visits, Juneau and
Sitka.
Sitka, Skagway.
Love Sitka, yeah.
But now you've also got these much smaller expedition-type ships that can go right in to the glaciers and can get up close and personal with
really?
The animals. Huge difference between a small cruise ship or, for example, the National Geographic sponsors a number of cruises that do things that are not normally the kind of thing you'd expect in a cruise because they use ships that are equipped to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway.
It certainly does inspire the mind's curiosity to think about all the different things that you could do.
Exactly, and think about doing them. And again, to remind us of some of these things, one of the things while you're doing this research up front, which we keep talking about, find out if there are disability groups in the country that you're going to, if you want to take the time to do that.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody you can call, you'd be very surprised because almost all of these countries, even if we think about them as third world countries, have organizations that deal with specific disabilities.
Oh, my gosh.
There's no reason not to ask the question, to find out, so that if you have a problem, you get somebody you can call along with the other folks we've talked about.
How would you do that through a tour guide? I mean, a tour company, or how would you approach that?
Like everything else I do on the internet, I'd start with that, and I'd contact the embassy if it's a third world country. Let me talk to somebody who knows questions about how disabled people are treated in XYZ country, and whether there are organizations that help them. Can I get some information about who those organizations are, who I could contact? I'm trying to set up a trip, and I want to be sure that I've covered all my bases when it comes to an issue that might arise while I'm over there.
Mm-hmm. Of course, then you have to think about language issues, too. A lot of them have English for those kinds of outreach purposes, they'd have somebody who's at least somewhat fluent in it, I would think, perhaps.
Well, English has become the universal language,
mm-hmm.
and there are people that speak, typically people that speak enough of it that you can at least understand them. If you're in China, as my daughter will certainly testify to, it can be difficult. You got a huge population of China that's educated in the United States, so they have really good English, but that's a country of how many hundred million people?
Exactly.
And a large percentage of them only speak a Chinese tongue.
Like a regional?
Or more likely, something like Mandarin that's more universal. But Mandarin's a tough language to learn.
Mm.
But one of the suggestions, again, about travel, if you're serious about it, have at least some rudimentary indication of the language that you can get around. And again, you talk about cell phones. Have that information in there right at your hand, right at the hand, so you can speak at least enough Mandarin to get around.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's a tough language to speak fluently, at least there's enough words in there. And frankly, most countries really appreciate your attempt to try to speak their language.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's always, it's a compliment to them. It's a compliment in terms of your respect for them if you do those things.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying that. I'm not sure I'm going to do it myself. It's easy to do in Europe where the languages may not be the same, but they're at least close enough to English that you can. And typically, again, those countries all have a lot of people who speak English.
Sure.
So it isn't as much of an issue. But there are parts of the world where that just isn't true. So.
Mm-hmm. Is there any place that you haven't been that you would like to go, but you, for whatever reason, haven't yet?
Ooh, there are. I'd like to go to South America. Mm. That's one place I haven't been. I've been to Cartagena, Colombia, and that's about it. I would love to go to Colombia. I'd love to go to some of these countries that are just beautiful countries. Again, I've been around Mexico, but I have not been in South America.
So, and you didn't do any train travel in Mexico?
I did not.
Huh.
I did not. We drove. And most of the traveling in Mexico was when I was a kid.
Okay.
My parents loved to drive.
Well, that was a long time ago in terms of what might be different now.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So.
I know you say that you normally want to go someplace once because there are so many places that you haven't been. Is there someplace that you were in which now, years later, could be a decade, could be longer, want to go back and see as a different version of yourself? You're older, you're more experienced than the last time you were there, and you might want to see the changes.
Well, one place I loved when I went there and wish I had been able to go back and still at some point want to go back is Malta. It's an amazing island, amazing people. Great to travel around. There's very pretty vistas and all kinds of things that people just don't think about Malta when they think about places they'd want to go. But it is a fantastic country.
Do a lot of people from Europe end up in Malta for vacations?
Very much so. Yeah, and they've got yacht clubs and they've got all golf courses and all the stuff that the people expect when they go to a resort. But there's also a lot of places that are a little more isolated and. A lot of churches in Malta, very Catholic
really?
Country.
Okay.
So they have a lot of churches. I'm not sure how much the people use the churches, but they're there.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, the secularization of Malta has hit everything else. But very interesting place to go. I would strongly recommend it as some place you don't think about going to, but you would go to.
It's
very, very obviously very peaceful and generally high standard of living, worth going to.
Yeah, it's that standard of living that I was thinking about too, because it is not necessarily a resort destination, but a travel destination for so many different kinds of people out of Europe. I would think it also would be very accessible.
Boy, that's a good question. I didn't go as enough places to know that. Mm. I don't have the impression that it's real accessible. But again, it is sufficiently accessible that it's worth considering and asking questions and finding. I know there are some beautiful resorts and worth thinking about.
Excellent. Well, we have shared between us a world of information to go further research and further explore. So I think that we should do this again at some point. Roger, what do you think?
Absolutely.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, another fifth Saturday on the road again travel interview is now going to conclude. I'm kind of sorry because I'd like to ask some more questions. Roger, we'll meet again.
We certainly will. And this was a treat, as it has been in the past when we've done this.
Excellent.